Glad to have all of you with us for today's Political Rewind. I hope you had a terrific weekend. If you're listening in real time, it's Monday afternoon, and we are continuing in one of the most consequential periods of American politics that I think we've gone through, certainly in decades, if not longer than that. Jim Galloway is back. We missed you last week. You were you took a little trip with your daughters.
On Saturday I drove 12 hours from Cleveland to Atlanta and lucked out because Ohio State, University of Kentucky, and University of Tennessee were all playing away.
Yeah, that is a good thing. Jim, of course, is the lead political writer for the AJC. And he's in the paper on Wednesdays and Sundays and oversees the Political Rewinder, the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. Wow, Jesse Neutzinger has come into the studio. If you all saw him on Facebook Live, our engineer, looking for a little space FaceTime. All right, let's keep going. Mary Margaret Oliver, state rep from Decatur, back with us, and we're really glad to have you here today, Mary Margaret. We are getting, guys, we're getting some feedback from another program. Can we fix that? Thank you. Mary Margaret Oliver, welcome. I'm sorry, I feel terrible that your introduction was so rudely interrupted. How are you?
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good. Glad to have you here. Eric Tannenblatt, Republican, longtime Republican advisor to everybody from presidential candidates, Mitt Romney, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, one of the most prolific fundraisers in the Southeast. Eric, thank you for being here as well.
Glad to be here.
And I always forget to mention that you were Sonny Perdue's chief of staff during his first term.
That's right.
As governor. Okay, we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, impeachment is going to be a major topic of conversation for weeks moving forward. Jim, I want to start with, I want to ask you to help me figure something out here. You know that this show really prides itself on trying to have respectful, balanced conversations. We reject people coming in with talking points that they've gotten from their political party.
No scripts.
I have to acknowledge that I'm a little worried about the passion behind the impeachment effort. Everybody's locked down into their partisan corners. And all I can say is I think we're going to have to work as hard as we can to make sure that we still have smart, respectful conversation. I love the fact that Mary Margaret and Eric probably disagree on any number of aspects of this, but what we want to go is for honest conversation. I don't want to hear about, oh, you know, Joe Biden got a prosecutor fired to save his son. That isn't the way it unfolded. On the other hand, Biden probably should be answering questions about his son's involvement with Ukraine, with China. I mean, that's a legitimate line of inquiry.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I think what we're going to have to do is just make a concerted effort to get away from the tweets.
I think that's right.
Everybody's tweets.
All right. Okay. Let's just plunge in. We know that this week, Kurt Volker, who resigned, Eric Tannenblatt, that's probably the most significant, I think, resignation early on in this impeachment inquiry. He'd been a non-paid advisor on matters in Ukraine. I don't know if you ever dealt with him during the Bush years, but Volker was very respected as a guy who understands politics in Ukraine. He was implicated in the whistleblower report. And he's now resigned and going to be one of the first people who's called to testify in the House Intelligence Committee.
I don't know him personally, but I know him, by reputation, very, very well regarded. And, you know, I think we need to hear what he has to say and not draw any conclusions.
I think that's right. Mary Margaret, at the same time, we are hearing a lot from the president. The weekend, he was fierce in his condemnation of the Democrats who are, he says, after him. He tweeted that at least, I don't know how many people were guilty of treason during his tweets this weekend. He this morning tweeted about Adam Schiff, the chair of the Intelligence Committee, said that he may be guilty of treason. Democrats are going after it's the biggest witch hunt yet. Your thoughts about that?
I do not know, and probably will never be in a real position to know whether the president's strategy is one totally 100% as a shock performer, a reality star shock performer. Anything he says shocking, we pay attention to, and therefore he succeeds. Or whether it's some kind of genuine pathology where he cannot have any, he has no filters, and he says something mean and not accurate every time he opens his mouth. I don't know which it is.
Jim, it is, you know, to say he's guilty of treason is taking it a step too far. Adam Schiff, does seem to me, I know you were taking the week off, but in his opening statement when they first brought in the director of national intelligence, he did kind of spoof. He used gangster language to spoof the summary of the transcript in describing Trump. And it probably was a terrible mistake, and it opened the door for Trump to go
fine,
after
it's fine
him.
To criticize him for that.
Yeah.
But we just need to remember that treason is something that's punishable by death. And you are really ratcheting up the language there. Trump used the same phrase in a speech when he was talking about the whistleblower late last week. And again, you know, this was even as the director of national intelligence was in front of the U.S. Senate saying that he was convinced of the decent motivation of the whistleblower.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot about my role, my professionalism as a lawyer versus my role as an elected politician. There's an element of performance to both, but I'm drawn to, in politics, I try to discipline myself. What are the real facts here? Let's eliminate the performance on either side. Let's eliminate the name calling. Let's look at evidence only. And as I try to kind of lower my anxiety level about what's going to happen next, which is kind of scary times, I want to look only at the evidence and not the pejorative finger pointing.
All right. But the problem, though, is we're living in this hyper-partisan, polarized period. And, you know, the president has a lot of people that have been coming after him. The Democrats, you know, were disappointed when he got elected. And so, unfortunately, we're not, you know, living at a time where, you know, we have Democrats and Republicans that can get along with one another. I wish that we were, you know, in a time where we can do that, but we're in this hyper-partisan, polarized period of time, and everyone's pointing fingers at everyone else. And so, I think you're seeing the president react.
So I want to actually, I'm glad you both made those comments, because I'd like to try something. We actually, the show on Friday, we had Jackie Gingrich Cushman and Stacey Evans on, a Republican and Democrat. And I asked each of them to just very, you know, briefly summarize where they stand right now on this whole impeachment inquiry. And I'd love to do the same for each of you, because I think that gives us a starting point. It gives you a chance to state your point of view on this, and then we can kind of talk around that. So, Mary Margaret, what are you thinking right now as you watch this inquiry unfold?
I agree totally that we're in a hyper-partisan, hyper-polarized area, and that tells me that to whatever extent I have a public view or a public platform, I have to be more disciplined about looking at evidence and less distracted by name calling. I think the President of the United States calling up a foreign leader and saying, "Do me a favor, please investigate my political opponent," is very dramatic evidence. And I don't think he's denying that he said that. He says it doesn't matter, maybe, but it is evidence that's relevant. And as he raises, as we all learn around this table, that there's some other set of secret computer files where the pattern seems to be that politically damaging things, that the president does say politically damaging things at a regular pace, that there's more evidence to be learned. I want to look at the evidence and not the finger pointing. I think Speaker Pelosi was correct when she says the facts is dictating what political steps she is obligated to take.
Eric?
Well, I agree with Mary Margaret in terms of I want to see the facts. I'm not going to draw any conclusions. I don't think the president is acting any differently than he has acted during his entire term of office. And he has produced tremendous results for the American people. And his supporters view him as someone who got elected to fight for them. And that's exactly what he's doing. And I think, unfortunately, because of the partisan polarized environment we live in right now, it's hard to sort of separate out. I think this impeachment inquiry, you'll start to see if there's any there. I think Speaker Pelosi, when she called for this impeachment inquiry without taking a vote of the full House, as was done in the past in 1998, when the House, launched an inquiry into President Clinton, the fact that she just went ahead and called for it without taking a vote, to me, demonstrated the partisan nature of this, which makes me take pause, because it's clear that there are 30 Democratic House members that represent swing districts that President Trump won. And my hunch is she didn't want to have to put them in a position to go on record. And so it's hard to separate out the politics from all of this. I will say that it seems right now that the Republicans in Congress, who know a whole lot more than I do, and I think the general public, just because they're serving on these committees, seem at the moment to be sticking with the president. And so I will follow their lead.
I want to unpack something that you just said, Eric, and turn to you on this, Jim. A couple things, really. Number one, I think Eric has gone further than many of the Republicans who we just described on the Hill in saying he believes, too, that we need to see how this unfolds. That's more than a great many Republicans on the Hill are saying. They're calling the thing a farce. But I think here's the other thing that he pointed out, and I want to get you both in on this, Jim and Mary Margaret. And that is, to some extent, I think Democrats, and Pelosi particularly, would say this is an entirely new animal. The president and Zelensky, the president appearing to look for dirt on a political opponent, maybe to use leverage of a weapon system, whatever. But it is also true that starting with Rashida Tlaib at her victory rally, saying we're going to impeach that, and then used a terrible swear word, it does seem to me that the public out there might wonder if this is just continuing pattern, and if that doesn't hurt Democrats, and they got to get past that.
And quite frankly, I think that's one reason why you have seen the numbers on the polling numbers on impeachment really kind of stay in the low 40s. And not move much until very recently. I mean, I want to see more polling. I don't want to say this represents a significant trend, but we have seen a jumping up of those endorsing at least an inquiry into impeachment.
However, though, if you look at the numbers, where the numbers have changed is you always had Democrats that wanted to move and see impeachment. You're seeing independents right now are moving, but Republicans have not.
No, they haven't. But I think what's happening is, and this is part of Pelosi's strategy, is that you've got a much simpler storyline. And it's one, as Mary Margaret just said, it's one that has been kind of unveiled by the White House, that there was a phone call, there was a conversation. You know, you can argue about what was intended, whether, nobody is saying the words quid pro quo were uttered, but can you do me, I need a favor, though, is becoming one of the most important political phrases of the 21st century.
Mary Margaret, jump in.
I think the number of people who support impeachment, which you say is Democrats, I think it's a little bit broader on the polling.
No, it's independents, but the numbers for Republicans.
Republicans and Democrats is what you mean. Independents for both parties is what you mean, I assume. But forgive me, but the point I'm making is that it is a simple, credible statement that the president is alleged to have made that is set out in a very factual way and is not denied that please do me a favor, go after my political opponent.
Okay, but Mary Margaret, let me ask you to address this. When the president or Republicans on the Hill who did the rounds of the Sunday shows, and we're going to hear from one of them, our own Doug Collins, in a couple minutes, when they say the Democrats have been out to get this guy from the very beginning, they've always wanted to get him out of office. There is some reason to think that the American people believe there's truth behind that. They have, you know, if first it was the Mueller investigation, which did not exonerate the president, despite his efforts to say, and Republican efforts to say it did, there is something to having to be careful about the fact that they make a point. There have been Democrats who have wanted him out from the very beginning.
There are many Democrats who don't believe he was qualified to be president, and there are many Americans who didn't believe that and who feel endangered by the fact that he's irresponsible in what he says and how he conducts himself.
But Mary Margaret, but we also need to understand and recognize that the scorched earth policy didn't begin in 2016. That, you know, that there were House Republicans meeting in January 2009 discussing on how they would oppose Barack Obama at every turn and Mitch McConnell swore himself that he was going to be a one-term president.
My only goal was to make sure he wouldn't be reelected. I believe I'm quoting
Mitch McConnell fairly closely.
The atmosphere of negativity does not begin with Donald Trump. I think Bill Clinton would say that, or Richard Nixon would say that. I mean, we have had a theatrical finger-pointing in our political realm for a couple of three decades now that I've been paying attention. But there have always been responsible leaders of both parties, i.e. the Nixon indictments, and where they have sat together and said, what is good for American people in this dangerous time? And I think we're in a dangerous time right now. I don't know whether Bill Clinton having an improper, immoral relationship was a dangerous time for the country, but I am concerned that it's a dangerous time for the country right now in the way President Trump is conducting himself with foreign leaders.
I want to make sure that I say something clearly here. I am not suggesting that Democrats may not have had a series of reasons for wanting to impeach at different stages in this president's tenure. I mean, clearly there's been behavior beyond the norm that perhaps warrants the kind of scrutiny that he's gotten. The only point I'm trying to make here has to do with this whole notion, Eric Tannenblatt, of how you start bringing. Nancy Pelosi said all along, if we're going to do an impeachment, I don't want it to be partisan. I want to make sure we get some Republicans on our side. I want to make sure the American people are more on our side. So I'm not suggesting, maybe Trump has deserved this scrutiny from the start. All I'm talking about is now that they have something awfully firm, awfully specific, awfully concrete, it's up to Democrats to prove why this isn't just part of a flailing about to try to get the president out of office.
I agree, but Nancy Pelosi didn't have, you know, bipartisan support. Was there one Republican that stepped forward for the impeachment inquiry? And I just want to clarify a comment you made before. When I said that, you know, I want to see what comes out, that's not me, suggesting that there's something that's going to come out.
No, but you're willing to wait and weigh the evidence that's produced is what I thought I heard you say.
I mean, there has not been anything yet that has come out. There's not been any concrete evidence yet that has come out. And let's see when they have this inquiry and, you know, the committee's now meeting. I mean, clearly what was in the transcript and, you know, what was in the whistleblower report, you know, made people take pause. But again, I don't think that there's anything in listening to the president and people close to the president that the president did that was not different from the way he's conducted himself throughout his term in office.
I'm grimacing because he has a certain pattern of his language and his name calling and his and not respectful in any way of norms, rules, and precedents. But I do think it's different. I don't think that can minimize what the evidence is of the whistleblower, which I've read, I'm sure all of us have read, him asking a foreign president for a favor to investigate an opponent. In fact, the leading opponent, the one that Trump says is the one that is the most serious.
Right. Look, I think what we're going to find out quite a bit more this week. I'm sure it's going to leak out, but on Wednesday, you've got, I cannot pretend to know her name or to pronounce her name, but you have on Wednesday, you have the Ukrainian, the U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine who was dismissed essentially by the Trump administration in May when this thing began percolating. On Thursday, we've got Kirk Volker
coming into three committees on Thursday.
Into three committees. And then I do believe on Friday, in a closed meeting of the House Intelligence Committee, you've got the whistleblower himself or herself.
We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring in any way in this particular presidency. I think that is a very, very serious thought that I have on an hour-to-hour basis. What are we going to learn tomorrow?
Here's what I think is really the let's strip away the partisanship for a second here. In the fight about this, it was interesting. I saw polling this weekend that said there are very few Americans who don't believe that Trump did exactly what the whistleblower report says, what the transcript or the summary there.
No, it's the meaning
it's
that they
It's a question of whether
it.
They think it was okay or not. In other words, everybody already knows who Donald Trump is, and they are either fine with that or they're not, which is what makes this really fascinating.
Well, and this is, impeachment is a political process, and so you know how this is going to play out. I mean, the House is going to, they're majority Democrat, they're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a vote for impeachment. It'll go to the Senate. The Senate is under Republican control. They're not going to, convict him. And so I sort of take the David Brooks approach of last week in the editorial writer in the New York Times. We have an election next November. Let's deal with this next November. And if the American people don't think Donald Trump should continue on as president, they can vote him out. Instead, we're going to have a year now where the country is just going to continue to be divided and polarized. And meanwhile, there's a whole host of other issues that our Congress is supposed to be dealing with and our leaders are supposed to be dealing with that they're putting by the wayside because they're focusing on this.
All right. I've got to get to a break. The only thing I will say, I think I'm the only one in the studio right now old enough to have remembered the Nixon impeachment play out really well. Mary Margaret claims to be, but I know she's not really. If you, at the beginning of that inquiry, you would have made the same statement that Eric Tanblatt is saying, they'll never convict him in the House because the Republicans
the Senate,
are...
Yeah. No, in the Senate.
No, I'm sorry. They'll never impeach him in the House before we even get to the Senate, which we never did because he resigned.
There were people
My
of
point
reason,
is the momentum developed.
Sam Irwin and Herman Talmadge. Mm-hmm. There were people of serious positions who gave thoughtful on in a bipartisan way. And that's the model that I would hope we would come to. The more we say it is political, of course it's political, but the more we say it's only political, and the more we say it's only representative of our hyper-partisanship, it detracts from the opportunity for reasonable people to really think clearly.
All right, let's do this. I want to get a break in. I really appreciate you all getting a chance to really give us your feelings about how this is developing. I want to do two things, though, after the break. Number one, Mary Margaret, Jim says that she is worried, nervous about what we're in a moment that's, good reason to be afraid of. I want to talk about a statement that was made on Fox News Sunday that President Trump picked up on that is a little alarming. And then let's talk about Georgians and how they're deeply involved in all this. We'll do that when we come back.
If you recently supported GPB during our fall fund drive, thank you. We're already putting your dollars to work to bring you the programs that matter to you on GPB. If you didn't get a chance to donate during the drive, your online contribution now will still make a difference. Please take a couple of minutes to go to gpb.org and click the green donate button at the top of the page. Thanks so much for your generous support of GPB and the service we provide every day.
In the 1970s, oil companies faced an uncertain future, and in looking to diversify, several of them got into solar energy, funding early critical research.
I'm no fan of oil companies, but I have to be fair when thinking about who did what when.
Big Oil's role in helping to launch the solar industry and the latest on the push for impeachment. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and gpbnews.org, or ask your smart speaker to play GPB.
Jim Galloway and Mary Margaret before the break suggested we may be living in kind of dangerous times. One example of that could be that on Fox News yesterday, Pastor Robert Jeffress said if the Democrats are successful in removing the president from office, it will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which our country will never heal. The president took that quote and tweeted it out. Tom Faust looked at Jeffress' background and points out he's made derogatory comments about Islam, calling it a religion that promotes pedophilia. He's called Mormonism a cult. So he's got a reputation for being an extremist. But for the fact the president is now tweeting out that this could be civil war-like in its impact is a little scary.
And you had immediate Republican pushback on that.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. I would just, to all you history buffs out there, I would say first of all that the sectionalism that caused the last Civil War is not there. I mean, we're a very a kind of fragmented people, but we're all kind of geographically dispersed pretty evenly.
Well.
So I think it's the intention of making this a. Any decision to abandon Trump is a decision to abandon the nation.
Eric,
that's what I think the danger is.
I apologize,
right, exactly.
Jim. Adam Kinzinger is a Republican from Illinois. Responded. He said that he was very upset. He said that I never imagined such a quote to be repeated by a president. This is beyond repugnant. There's the kind of chink in the armor that you have to wonder could in fact spread, yes?
Well, and
Trump's his own worst enemy.
Well, and I know Congressman Kinzinger. He's a veteran, very well regarded in the House Republican caucus, and I think his comments were appropriate. But look, the president is being attacked, and as we've seen over the last several years, when he's attacked, he fights back. And, you know, I know that we hearken back to the past and some of our leaders in the past. The one thing we need to make sure we don't forget is we're living in a very different time with social media. And unfortunately, that just fuels the polarization at warp speed. And we're having to deal with that.
The polarization, social media, does not detract from my responsibility, our responsibility, to move away from irresponsible comments and to move away from an attitude, it's just politics. We have to be serious people. We have to be serious-minded about the evidence that's coming forward and recognize that many of the things that President Trump says and does, and this example of this phone conversation, can be very injurious to the national interest of America.
Doug Collins was one of the people, Representative Collins, Congressman Collins, who, of course, is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee and has certainly proven his ability to be a fierce defender, and a pretty smart one at that, defender of Trump in Judiciary. He was on the talk shows yesterday. Did you want to say something about Doug Collins?
I enjoyed working with him very much in the House. He was a young man, came in from Gainesville into the House of the Georgia General Assembly, had a very quick rise. He has a good skill set. He has a long Army career, Armed Forces career, a chaplaincy career, and he got a law degree kind of later in his life and had begun practice law. So my experience with him, working with him on a day-to-day basis, particularly in the Appropriations Committee and on legal matters, was all extremely positive. Now I see him saying irresponsible things.
All right, we're going to play his soundbite in a minute, but it's interesting, Jim, that Mary Margaret, the Democrat, worked well with Doug Collins, because there was just a piece, Politico, just had a piece about how he and Hakeem Jeffries, one of the most prominent Democrats in Congress, have formed this really a close relationship, partnership, to try to get things done. So he is capable of working across party lines, but his job
he's got a different assignment right now.
Let's listen to what he said on Fox News yesterday.
No, he's not in jeopardy of being removed from office. He's in jeopardy of having to continue the onslaught of lies and attacks and half-truths from a one-sided investigation in the House. This is something from my position as ranking member of the Judiciary Committee. All you've had to watch is our committee completely fall apart under investigation. In fact, any time they've been allowed to we've allowed to have investigations, whether it be the Mueller report or these ridiculous hearings that Chairman Nadler's had in Judiciary Committee, it has always tended to shown that the president has done nothing wrong, that the collusion was a false narrative, that the conspiracies, all these things were false when you actually investigate. So now they've decided, let's throw that out the window because that's not working for us. Fairness is not working. Being on the right side of the American people is not all right. So we're just going to ramrod it through. That's what's happening right now.
Jim?
Yeah, I mean, this is, look, I think it's at some point you have to consider that Doug Collins is the president's attorney and is making an argument for his client. Yeah.
He has a job. I recognize that. He has a political job, and he is the mad dog spokesman for the president in the House committee. However, that does not tell me that I need to adopt that acceptance of that kind of leadership.
I think this is an example of the partisan nature of things. You just talked earlier, Mary Margaret, about how you enjoyed working with him. You served on appropriations with him. You know, you talked about his background. I never heard you once say just now that we should give him the benefit of the doubt, or because of my past experience with him, maybe there's some truth to what he's saying. But automatically, because we're talking about the president, you take the position that he's just one of the president's
henchmen. Well, yeah, but he talked about Democrats lying. No, I mean, it isn't as if his statement was...
But he's basing that on his experience as the ranking member of Judiciary, and they just went through a long hearing process where he felt that the Republicans were shut out.
I accept that in his political role, this is the kind of performance that he's obligated to give. I just don't feel it's an honest discussion of the issues. And I would, of course, say that to him personally. And I saw him personally somewhere recently, and we had a nice chat. But this is the wrong tone. This is the wrong way to lead, my opinion.
Jim Galloway, Doug Collins submitted his name. He applied for the job of Johnny Isaacson's seat based on the governor's interesting process of asking applicants to submit their applications and their resumes, whatever. How does this help him or hurt him in terms of being the selection?
Well, number one, I mean, it puts him very, very close to Donald Trump. And of course, as we know, in 2018, Donald Trump had a lot to do with Brian Kemp's ascension during the Republican runoff over Casey Cagle. There are some IOUs out there. So that's important. I think that the next few weeks could be very troublesome for Brian Kemp as he tries to pick the person who's going to replace Johnny Isaacson, because in a way he has to predict what the political climate is going to be in November 2020, and vis-a-vis Trump, vis-a-vis the Georgia Republican Party.
I think that is such a great observation, and Eric, it's exactly what I think we should talk about. If in fact he does pick Doug Collins, who is so completely aligned with President Trump now, we have to remember, Doug Collins won't run in a primary with other Republicans. He will be in a jungle general election in which voters will be able to choose among Democrats or Republicans. And even if the Senate chooses not to, McConnell may decide not to even have a trial if the House votes for articles of impeachment, but Collins will have tied himself to President Trump, and President Trump's favorabilities may have really plummeted, possibly even without a trial in the Senate.
Well, I think there's a lot of hypotheticals there.
Well, of course.
I think one of the things we have to keep in mind is that Johnny Isaacson is in office till the end of the year. So Governor Kemp has plenty of time to make a decision. And, you know, if we look at Nancy Pelosi's proposed schedule of trying to bring this to closure by Thanksgiving, you know, we have plenty of time, and Governor Kemp has plenty of time before he has to name his recommended successor for Senator Isaacson.
I forget the date when Senator Isaacson resigned, but 2 weeks ago I had it on, quote, good information, close quote, that Kemp's intent was to appoint somebody who was 100% aligned with Trump, 100%. It was only going to be a Trump-like appointee, not somebody who, like Johnny Isaacson, would say occasionally, the president really shouldn't have said that. That was a bad thing. So, but that was 2 weeks ago, and I think you're right. I think that Governor Kemp has to be cautious about what he doesn't know that's going to come out in the news tomorrow or 2 weeks from tomorrow.
I've got two breaking news stories Tom Faust just passed on to me. One of them is very relevant. Well, first, McConnell, the majority leader, there's been a lot of speculation. If the House votes articles of impeachment and sends it to the Senate for a trial, would McConnell even take up a trial? And apparently he gave a quote today. I'm sorry, Tom, I don't see the attribution of who he talked. CNBC, Tom just said. He said, quote, I would have no choice but to take it up based on a Senate rule on impeachment. So McConnell is saying, hey, I'd have to have a trial. And now, it could be a day long.
Right, or an hour long.
Right.
But I think, number one, I think that may be a message to the White House. To let's start paying attention to your P's and
really
Q's
good point.
as to what you are saying and how you are treating House Democratic requests for information.
Right.
And it's also remember that Mitch McConnell is up for re-election next year, and
yes,
he's going to have to explain himself to Kentuckians.
Here's a better one. Georgia House Speaker Pro Tem Jan Jones today applied to Governor Brian Kemp for the appointment to succeed U.S. Senator Johnny Isaacson. Jan Jones, of course, you can tell us, Jim, more about her. She's been a very prominent member of the leadership in the Republican leadership in the House for a long time now.
She is right now, as of this moment, Mary Margaret. I think you can call her the highest ranking woman Republican in the state.
Certainly
right.
In the Georgia General Assembly.
Apparently, Tom just said he did a little checking. Highest ranking woman ever in the Georgia General Assembly.
Ever in the Georgia General
What do you
Assembly
think State. About her as a candidate for that job, Mary Margaret? You've worked with her.
Well, the conventional wisdom was that she was not going to be a candidate. So it's reflective of the conventional wisdom changes hour to hour. She's got some strengths. She's got some skills. She's not ever had to campaign really anywhere, I mean, outside of her district. And she hasn't been challenged in her district. So being tested as a statewide campaigner to the voters is a little bit of a no.
How much how big is her area?
She represents her house district. It is up in North Fulton.
Yeah.
She's from Johns Creek.
Right.
Milton. That's
so,
right.
Okay. So a Republican
right.
woman from North Metro.
And let me just say that would not be, at least as far as November 2020 is concerned, that would not be a bad move to
Eric,
put her on the
ballot. Yeah, Eric, you've said off the air that you think Kemp's got to pick somebody who would really add value to the Republican ticket in 2020, and the idea of a suburban Republican woman. I'm not suggesting you're endorsing her, but that's one way to add value.
No, I mean, what it says is, you know, we've got a lot of very qualified candidates.
Right.
I happen to know Jan and have known her for years, and I think that, you know, she is a very qualified and capable candidate. I've said all along, right after Johnny announced his retirement, that this is an opportunity to look ahead to the future of the party. And, you know, where the Republican Party had some challenges in the last election was in the suburbs. We lost 13 state legislative races, and this is, or seats. This, you know, Jan Jones represents a part of the state that, you know, Republicans have had some challenges. And I think Jan, who has been elected as Speaker Pro Tem by her peers and her colleagues from all over the state, I think she comes to this with some gravitas.
I totally agree that the suburbs have been the area where white educated women have not voted Republican because of the gun issues, because of the Trump issues. So, I mean, that would put her in a difficult spot. Could she be 100% Trump person, 100% gun person, 100% NRA person?
Well, wouldn't you follow...
And be for 481 when she's surrounded all around her in that outer perimeter by seats that have been flipped.
Well, wouldn't you watch how Karen Handel manages that for one test of how a Republican woman deals with those issues, getting too in bed with Trump or not.
Did Karen Handel win?
Well, no, but she's back in the game is the point.
I think that the time is for the suburbs. My guess is that it's more anti-Trump than it was prior to 16 election.
She would pose an interesting situation as to how closely she tied herself to Trump. I think another problem might be the fact that because she's in a leadership position, she's not really identified with any specific issue or cause out there. I mean, that's something that you kind of give up when you're in the position she has been.
You know, Jim,
Mary Margaret is disagreeing with me.
Well, actually, I want to move on if we can.
Oh, sure.
It's the same basic idea, though. What we're all saying here, without having said it specifically, is that for as long as this impeachment plays out, it is going to be the dominant. It is going to be what the 2020 election revolves around as long as it plays out. I mean, Pelosi says she'd like her committees to work through this 2-week recess, come back, continue to have hearings, and she wants by the end of the year to know whether there are articles of impeachment, whether the House is ready to impeach. So that means a trial presumably wouldn't start until sometime early next year. The 2020 race for months to come is going to be revolving around impeachment.
But it might not be revolving around impeachment 6 months ago. The uncertainty of
six,
our ground...
Say that again?
6 months from now. Oh. I mean, the uncertainty of our ground is really, really significant to me. And clearly, voters care about health care. They seem to care about guns in an increasing way. They care about a lot of issues that we aren't talking about. And the impeachment is our topic today, and it's a very pivotal time between now and Christmas. But what people think in March and what they care about is something I will not predict.
That's a great point. Thank you.
But I do think that, you know, it is taking away from the Democratic primary to pick the nominee, because right now we're not talking about the Democratic candidates running for president.
Right.
We're talking about Donald Trump and what's happening in Washington.
That's right. We got to get to a break, but I think that's so important. Jim, you don't want to be Amy Klobuchar right now. You don't want to be Cory Booker. You might not even want to be Kamala Harris. People or Pete Buttigieg, Democratic presidential candidates with a lot of ground to make up to get into hunt again.
The discussion we're having on impeachment right now redounds to the benefit, I think, of Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden.
Absolutely.
Right, race is frozen.
Well, you know what? Let's talk. I'm glad you said that, because I think talking about Joe Biden would be a great thing to do when we come back from this break.
From Morning Edition and On Second Thought to Political Rewind and All Things Considered, listener support makes everything you hear on GPB possible. If we didn't hear from you during our fall fund drive, your contribution now will still make a difference. Please take just a couple of minutes to support the programs you rely on and enjoy on GPB, and do your part now at whatever level is right for you. Go to gpb.org and click donate, and thanks so much for your support of Georgia Public Broadcasting.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Antonio Banderas talks with us about his long collaboration with Spanish filmmaker Pedro Almodovar. Their work together began after the death of Spain's longtime dictator Franco, when it was possible to break old rules. Banderas now stars in Almodovar's new film Pain and Glory as a director dealing with physical and psychic pain. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
We're back on Political Rewind. I want to talk about Joe Biden in a minute, but when I said a couple minutes ago that right now impeachment seems to have a big impact on this race, I did this last week at some point, but, you know, up in the 7th Congressional District, Carolyn Pordeaux was one of the first Democrats to jump out and say, I want to see the impeachment move forward. And one of her Republican opponents, Lynn Hamrick, who I know Eric Tanenblad is pretty familiar with, Eric, she immediately put a robocall up that attacked Carolyn Bordeaux over the impeachment. Here's what it sounded like.
This is Lynn Homrick. I'm a conservative Republican running to represent you in Congress. I'm calling because today, far-left Democrat and candidate for Congress, Carolyn Bordeaux, joined Nancy Pelosi in supporting the impeachment of President Trump. We need to fight back. Press 1 now to join me in fighting for results over resistance. In Congress, I'll stand with President Trump against far-left attacks.
So, Eric Tanenbaum, that's what I mean with, for the time being at least, these races are revolving around impeachment in many ways, although it's fascinating. The Jolt today and the AJC in a couple of other articles pointed out that over the weekend there were a number of Democratic events for national office where nobody talked about impeachment at all.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point. I've been traveling a lot and talking to people around the country, and it's interesting. I mean, we're political junkies. You all are in the media. But, you know, if you talk to people that are, you know, going to work every day, raising their family, they're not talking about this. This is not a big issue to them.
I think that's a fair point. I think
and look, you've had Democratic presidential candidates in Iowa say the exact same thing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Joe Biden. Mary Margaret, there's this sense that that when you look at the actual timeline of Joe Biden going to Ukraine. Or not going, but talking about Ukraine, how he had this prosecutor removed to protect his son's stake in a Ukrainian gas and oil company, whatever. It turns out it's completely fallacious the way the president's people are putting it together. And yet, every day, the news is talking about Biden and a scandal, his son in a scandal. And let's listen to the Republican commercial that's now on the air about that.
Joe Biden promised Ukraine $1 billion if they fired the prosecutor investigating his son's company.
If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired.
But when President Trump asks Ukraine to investigate corruption, the Democrats want to impeach him. And their media lapdogs fall in line. They lost the election. Now they want to steal this one. Don't let them.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
So, Mary Margaret, it's a false narrative, and I'm hoping on the show we'll find a time in the days ahead to just go through the actual narrative of what happened there. The prosecutor who was looking at the Hunter Biden, the company that he was involved with, in fact had dismissed the case earlier than all of this stuff is alleged to have been, the pressure Biden, Vice President Biden, is alleged to put on him. But it doesn't help Joe Biden's presidential campaign.
Of course it doesn't help. Joe Biden's authenticity and long public service, though, is a well-known truth to a Democratic voter with any length of life in this political world. His support from African-American voters is so strong and so far ahead of Elizabeth Warren and other leading, about to be leading candidates, that is very significant in terms of his strength. He is an authentic person, who he is, with gaffes, but his personal public service and personal authenticity as a human being and as a loyal friend of Barack Obama have brought him extremely far. So this kind of narrative to the base, I don't think, is going to influence a lot of Democratic voters.
Jim, African Americans enjoy, I mean, he's got enormous support in the African American community here.
This isn't going to touch it, I don't think. But look, the Washington Post had a very extensive article on Hunter Biden on Sunday, and what you kind of. He's a fellow that's had some substance abuse problems, had some behavioral problems, and there is a sense that Joe Biden couldn't always direct where his son could and did do business. It reminded me in a lot of Jimmy Carter and Billy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember, I think Billy Carter became a Libyan. Yeah. A lobbyist for yeah. Libyan at one point. What strikes me as very strange here is the kind of the Trump defenders who are pointing to Hunter Biden, and yet we've got we've got three Trump offspring doing business in all parts of the world. Even as their father is kind China, for instance.
I doubt if the voters read either the Washington Post, the average Democratic voter, but the Washington Post profile of Hunter or the New Yorker profile of Hunter Biden that I wrote. It's a sad parent story, is what it is.
Yeah, I think the thing that we need to not lose sight of the fact is that Joe Biden entered this race last spring. He was at 31%. Today, he's still at 31%. Elizabeth Warren entered the race, and she has steadily climbed. She's now taking over in Iowa and New Hampshire. And the trajectory for Elizabeth Warren is going up, where Biden's is staying the same. I don't know if this latest kerfuffle is going to impact Biden, and he'll drop a little bit. But if you look back in the last two presidential races, Donald Trump, it was in the fall before that election that he started to rise. Barack Obama started to rise in the fall. It's the candidate in the fall before the caucuses and primaries start that ends up ultimately becoming the nominee. And I think right now you got to put your money on Elizabeth Warren.
There it is, the Tannenblatt theory of electoral politics. I love that. It's interesting, Jim, that the Biden campaign is now going to all of the media outlets and saying, stop having Rudy Giuliani, stop quoting him, stop having him on your talk show, MSNBC, CNN, whatever, because he's promoting this false narrative. It is a false narrative.
You've got this narrative going that it was Ukraine that hacked the Democratic.
But going to the media, to stop Giuliani or saying that, we're not going to win Iowa. We're going to wait till South Carolina. All of that is excuses and reasons why Joe Biden's not doing well.
Let me be clear. I do think anytime a campaign goes to the media and basically tries to tell you who to have and who not to have on, they're playing the wrong hand. So that's a mistake. I just want to make sure.
Does Giuliani help the suburban, educated, white woman be energized for Trump? No. So let him talk.
No, but at the end of the day, if this becomes a race between Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren, this is going to be a race between capitalism and socialism. And I think at the end of the day, capitalism wins out.
I will say that that's not going to be the race to the American people who care about health care and their lives around their tables. The
free enterprise system impacts health care.
We are out of time for today's show. And the only thing I'd like to say in thanking Eric Tannenblatt, Mary Margaret Oliver, and Jim Galloway for today is there any question out there, folks, that we are going to have a really, really amazing series of shows coming up in the weeks and months ahead? And I hope continue to have smart and thoughtful conversations. And I appreciate the fact I think we were able to do that today. Jim Galloway, I'm glad you're back from your time off. I'm looking forward to seeing you again on Friday's show. By the way, on Wednesday, John Ossoff coming in for an interview about his candidacy. Meantime, I'll see you all tomorrow at 2:00.